Well, come with me, please, to Proverbs and chapter 2. And let's read it. We're going through our series in Proverbs, come to the third message. So Proverbs chapter 2. My son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding. Yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek for it like silver and search for it as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice and watching over the way of his saints. Then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity, every good path. For wisdom will come into your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will watch over you. Understanding will guard you, delivering you from the way of evil, from men of perverted speech who forsake the paths of uprightness, to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perverseness of evil, men whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. So you'll be delivered from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress with her smooth words, who forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. For her house sinks down to death and her paths to the departed. None who go to her come back, nor do they regain the paths of life. So you will walk in the way of the good and keep to the paths of the righteous. For the upright will inhabit the land, and those with integrity will remain in it. But the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the treacherous will be rooted out of it. Okay, the book of Proverbs. We're looking through this. I want to begin with some questions. And perhaps you'll see where these questions are going. And the questions aren't necessarily to do with what we've just read. But here's some questions that we all face, okay? Should I keep working or should I take a rest? This job means more money. Should I take it? They're very persuasive. What should I do? They're very friendly. Can I trust them? Why do we end up quarrelling? Should I marry this person? He doesn't like pets. Is that significant? I got a new colleague or a new neighbour. What's the best thing to do? Should I have a second helping? You might say, the kids! Or the kids' friends. What's the best thing to do? It's just a mess. Which way do we turn? Is Keir Starmer doing a good job? Should I admire Donald Trump? Was that the kiss of an enemy or a friend? Was that the wound of an enemy or a friend? Should I stay or should I go? Should I move away? What should I do with my money? Should I buy this or not buy it? Some situations, I'm hearing two different viewpoints. They're talking about the same thing. Which of them is telling me the truth? Which is right? I have a friend who always leaves me feeling low. Why is that? Should I give up on the friendship? Is this person worth listening to? What do I really think? What's really in my heart? What do I really want? What does this situation say about me, about us, about them? When should I retire? Does any of this really matter? How can I be more like Jesus in this situation? How can I do all things to the glory of God? In all those questions, they're all pulled out from different verses in Proverbs in different ways. All those, and there's lots of other ones we could have gone to. But in all those situations, what do we need? We need wisdom. Wisdom. So, Proverbs 26, verses 4 and 5, we read this. Answer not a fool according to his folly, ask not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. Okay? Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. Two verses, side by side, saying completely different things. One says to answer him, one says don't answer him. What do I do? Do I not answer, or do I answer? Do I reason with the unreasonable? Is this a waste of time? Or do I take them on at their own game to expose their folly? Which is it in this situation? And of course, I need wisdom. That's the point. All those questions, you won't find a verse which says, should I buy this? Should I have a second helping? And there's a verse which says, Gerard Hemmings, whatever you do, don't have a second helping. There is no verse. I have to make a judgment. I have to make a decision. I require insight, understanding, discretion. I need wisdom. And that's what wisdom is. It's seeing things as they really are. So I make the right decision. It's insight. It's understanding. It's discernment. It's wisdom. That's what this book is all about. And of course, where do we find wisdom? Well, we're told the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And then later on in chapter 9 and verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. In other words, you can't find wisdom outside the Lord. The Lord is the all-wise God. The only place you will find wisdom is if you are facing him, is if you are in a relationship with him, a relationship of humility, of humble dependence, of loving trust, of willing obedience, of joyful surrender. So I get wisdom from God. I daren't trust myself. I daren't go my own way. I live face to face with the Lord. Or if you like, I walk arm in arm with the Lord, and he chooses the way, and I go with him. Because actually that's living in the light of reality. Because the deepest reality of all, upon which all other reality is built, is the fact that God is. And wisdom is to live face to face with the Lord. And since the Lord Jesus Christ, we're told, he feared the Lord in a way which nobody else ever did. And he was the wisest human being who's ever lived. This is a book which, if I take to heart, will make me like the Lord Jesus Christ. So that kind of brings us up to speed. So why chapter 2? Why does chapter 2 go in the direction that it does? Well, if you look at just chapter 1, as we saw last time, there's in verses 20 to 33, wisdom is calling out. So wisdom cries, verse 20, aloud in the street, in the market she raises her voice at the head of the noisy street, she cries out at the entrance of the city gates, she speaks, and this is what she says, how long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? If you turn up my reproof, behold, I will pour out my spirit to you, I will make my words known to you, I'll make you wise. So there's this lovely invitation. Wisdom is personified. She's this woman. She's standing in a place where everyone can hear. She calls out. She says, look, you don't have to be fools. Turn up my voice. Come to me and I'll give you wisdom. So, if you stopped at chapter 1, you might think, well, that's it then, isn't it? I listen to wisdom's voice. I tune in. And I become wise. After all, Solomon, he asked for wisdom, didn't he? And he woke up the next day the wisest man in the world. So, that's it, isn't it? If I just listen to wisdom's voice, I ask for wisdom from the Lord, then I will be wise. Well, yes and no. Because that's where chapter 2 comes in. We want to be wise. All those sort of questions, all the questions we face them all the time and in all sorts of settings and situations. But listen to the way it puts it in chapter 2. Verse 1, my son, if. Verse 3, yes, if. Verse 4, if. Verse 5, then. So if, then you'll find wisdom. So there are some ifs. Ifs. And all the ifs call for effort and focus. And they call for prioritizing. They're asking me the question, what really matters in your life? Where do you place your priorities? You've got to prioritize this. You've got to put yourself into it. And if you do, then you will be wise. Now, chapter 2 can be sort of divided into 4. It's a bit like a journey, okay? So verses 1 to 7 is a base camp where you pick up all your provisions, okay? And then you go on your journey. I mean, it's all, you know, and you take all your provisions to a journey. As you go on the journey, as always on journeys, there are dangers, and then there's a destination. And that's really how the chapter works. Now, what I like to do every now and again is read Robert Falcon Scott's personal journal from his last trip to Antarctica. It was his last trip because he died on that trip. His expedition to the South Pole. He reached the South Pole 17th of January 1912, and he and his 4 companions died on the return journey. But if you read it, I was going to add a quote here about what every Englishman would love to hear, but I look around, there's not many Englishmen here, so I won't read it out. You can ask me later. But they arrive, and before they set off on the journey, they arrive in 1911. And what do? They set up base camp. And they get all their provisions. They get everything ready because they're going on this journey. And they don't leave all their provisions behind. They take their provisions with them. So as they set off on this journey, they're well provisioned and they are prepared for all they will meet with to the end of arriving at the South Pole and then returning from the South Pole. And actually, they almost made it. It is the greatest march in history. It's an extraordinary feat what these men did. Anyway, point being is they set up a base camp and they got their stores for the journey. So let's have a look at the base camp of chapter 2. Let's see what the stores are. Wisdom for the journey. What do we need? Well, this is what you need. Verse 1. My son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you. What does that mean? It means I need to be humble, doesn't it? If I think I know, I'm not going to learn anything. So the first thing is receiving words. The people who don't receive words are the people who think they already know. The people who don't treasure up commandments are people because they think, I don't need it, I've got it already. So there must be a humility, there must be a teachableness. Now you think that's obvious, wouldn't you? But actually all of us actually are very, very unwilling to be taught. A teachable spirit is actually quite rare. All of us left to ourselves think we know. It's part of our sin, isn't it? So we need to have a teachable spirit because we recognize the value of wisdom. And of course, it's if you receive my words, treasure up my commandments, the wisdom of God's word. And verse 2, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding. So I'm just humble, I'm teachable, but I'm actually listening. So everything else has got to stop. All the other noise has got to stop. All the screens are put away. Everything that distracts me has to be removed because I'm listening. But it's more actually than that. And inclining your heart to understanding. Now you know what it's like. Some of us are talking about this on the way in. Tonight, it's Sunday lunch, lots of noise going on, and there's chatter going on. You're trying to hear what people are saying. So what do? You lean in, don't you? You lean in, you don't lean back. You lean, because you're trying to hear. Well, the leaning in here is with your heart. So the whole of you is leaning in to hear what's to be said. Okay? Inclining your heart to understanding. So I'm not just hearing with these ears. My heart is leaning in to pick up what's being said. I'm hanging on wisdom's word. Again, you know what it's like. Some people speak very quietly and you kind of get the gist of what's going on, but you won't necessarily pick it all up. You lose details. Well, here I don't want to lose any details. Every word matters. So I'm leaning right in to hear what wisdom has to say. But not just that. Picking up my stores. So I'm humble, teachable, attentive to the word. I need to be prayerful. Verse 3. Yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding. Now, an element of that is actually walking with wise people. I talk with wise people. I walk with wise people. I learn from wise people. But actually, of course, supremely, it's seeking the Lord for his wisdom. It's saying, left to myself, I am a fool. I am a complete fool. So it means I need to be much with the Lord in prayer. And I need to put in the effort, verse 4, if you seek it like silver and search for it as for hidden treasures. Lots of good stories, aren't there? How does it begin? Someone opens a big old chest. Out, they find a map in the chest. X marks the spot. And then the adventure begins. Hidden treasure, buried treasure. Everyone's, and there's usually some villain who's trying to get the buried treasure as well. Everyone's searching for the buried treasure. We get that, don't we? The adrenaline gets going. It's exciting. It's an adventure. It's all consuming. X marks the spot. Well, searching for wisdom is like that. I'm searching for buried treasure. I need to dig. I need to get myself into the Word of God. I need to take it seriously. I need to get the map. If you had a map with X marks the spot, you'd be getting out the map again and again, wouldn't you? Wondering what the symbols meant. Wondering what that meant. In fact, you'd be looking at it so much that when you put it away and you closed your eyes, you could still see the map. That's the sense of it. This is an addiction. I'm consumed in the pursuit of wisdom. I'm digging here, searching there, looking at that, checking the map. So it requires effort. And inevitably, an element of that is therefore meditating. Now, we dig into the word, don't we, when we reflect on it. We meditate on it. And you know, although it doesn't say meditate here at the moment, it'll say it later on in Proverbs, but meditation means the Hebrew word is you repeat the word, you repeat what you've heard. You know, it's like if you seek directions, you know, I don't know which way to go, the person tells you, you turn left, you turn right, I keep repeating those directions to myself until they've got into my mind. And it's that sense of the word, I keep repeating it to myself, I keep talking it out in my mind until it really has caught me. I'm hanging on wisdom's words. I'm crying to God for wisdom. And I'm sparing no effort. Okay? So the word, prayer, sparing no effort. And then you expect it to say, and then you'll be wise. It doesn't say that, does it? Look at what it says. Then you will understand the fear of the Lord. And find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity. So, if you're humble, teachable, attentive to the word, prayerful, you make a real effort. That's not how you get wisdom, if I can put it like that. Because wisdom is not an envelope which the Lord hands us and says the answer to your question is in the envelope. When you get home, open the envelope and look at it and you'll know what the answer is. That's not how wisdom works. Okay? It's not an envelope that's handed to us and we go away. Wisdom is all about our relationship with the Lord. That's why it says, you know, if, then you'll be wise. No, then you'll understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. If you're humble, teachable, attentive to the word, prayerful, you put your effort into it, what will happen? You will deepen your relationship with the Lord. Wisdom is found in knowing the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Wisdom flows from our relationship with the Lord. So wisdom is found with God. Wisdom is revealed by God. So you are made wise in knowing God. That makes sense? I'm trying to get away from this idea that somehow wisdom is something that you can just take away and then look at later. It's actually a relationship. with the wise one. Okay? He has wisdom. He gives wisdom. He gives wisdom to those who seek after him. So it's a relational thing. And then you find that your heart will start to beat in tune with his. He'll give you his wisdom. And of course, that's always going to lead you to Christ. Because we're told, Colossians 1, 2, verse 3, Christ in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. So it's always going to lead you to Christ. It's all found in him. So it's saying this, the more you know the Lord, the wiser you become. The deeper your relationship with the Lord, the wiser you become. The more you delight in Christ, the wiser you become. And actually what will happen is that you begin, it's that thing in Chronicles of Narnia, isn't it? They've got the first lion, which is the wardrobe, Prince Caspian's the next one. Lucy says, Aslan, you've got bigger. He says, no, he's the same size, it's just that you're seeing him now as bigger. And the more our relationship with the Lord grows, the more we realise what wisdom begins to look like and how little wisdom we have and how much I need that wisdom. So get away from the idea of wisdom as being like a piece of information that you get to make the right decision. Because God's going to give you an envelope, you go away with the envelope, read what to say, okay, now I know what to do. It doesn't work like that. It's a relationship with the Lord. So that when you make your thousands of decisions, you don't have to go, what did it say about this? What was written on that envelope? You have a relationship and he gives you the wisdom that you need in that setting and in that situation. So, the closer you are to the Lord, the wiser you become, and the more you realise how much there is still to know. Okay, so there's our base camp. We spent the longest on the base camp, okay? I've got to be humble. So my starting point is I don't know. And therefore I'm teachable. And I'm attentive. Not just with the ears, but actually my heart is leaning in. I don't want to miss a word. And it goes hand in hand with asking, doesn't it? I don't understand. What do you mean by that? I need help. Give me wisdom, Lord. And that all requires effort. I don't pick it up by osmosis. I don't just sort of, you know, sit in a pool of wise things and I become wise. I have to put the effort in. And it all flows in my relationship with the Lord. That's where I get wisdom from. It's from him, face to face with him. Okay. Let's go on our journey then. Journey is verses 7 to 11. We're bringing our stores with us. We know it's a journey because if you look at things like verse 8, it talks about paths and the way. Verse 9 talks about every good path. And then in verse 7, going back, it says, he is a shield to those who walk in integrity. So this is a journey. John Bunyan caught it beautifully, didn't he? Pilgrim's Progress. We're on a journey. We've left base camp. We've taken our stores with us. We're journeying. As we journey, as we pilgrimage, verse 7, the Lord is our shield. So actually, this wisdom, this relationship, this closeness to the Lord is actually protective. He's guarding me. Verse 8, he's watching over me. And so when I'm going on the way and I suddenly come to a fork in the road and I don't know which way to go, well, verse 9, then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity and every good path. So I'm on my journey, I come to a fork in the road, which way do I go, which is the, you know, the language, which is the right path, which is the just path, which is the fair path, which is the good path. And I would know which path to take. You'll see into the heart of things. That's what wisdom is. You'll have discernment. You'll know what to do. And you'll make the right call. So wisdom keeps us safe on the journey. And then it says this in verse 10. For wisdom will come into your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. You'll grow in wisdom. It will pour into you. You'll have growing convictions, a growing understanding. Wisdom will come into your heart. As you come to the crossroads, which, I've never been here before, I don't know what to do, which is the right path, which is the wrong path, what's good, what's not good. I'll find wisdom comes into my heart. I think, I know what we should do in this situation. And actually, it's put rather lovely, isn't it? And knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. So again, this idea of wisdom, it's not sort of bad tasting medicine, but it'll do you good. The more actually you walk with the Lord, and the more wisdom he gives you, the more you delight in it. You keep coming back for more. The word there, pleasant, can mean sweet, delightful. It's not having to be forced down you reluctantly. Oh, all right, I suppose I ought to have some of this. It's bitter, but it's necessary. This wisdom which God gives is delicious. Give me more, give me more, give me more. I keep coming back for more. So that's the journey. Which then brings us to the next thing, because like any journey, there are dangers. And the danger is of leaving the narrow way. Again, Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. As you go along the narrow way, all these various dangers, and the danger of them leaving the way. There's a danger of the wrong path, isn't there? So verse 12, it talks about delivering you from the way of evil. Verse 16, you'll be delivered from the forbidden woman. So on this road, there are dangers. And when dangers arrive, you need to be delivered from them. And it points out two in particular. Because actually, there's wisdom's voice, but there are other voices out there. Yesterday, I probably like you, I get scam phone calls. I get them on my landline, and somebody called Mike rang me. But it wasn't you, Mike. It was someone from, I should imagine, a call centre somewhere in India. And I said, it was a scam. And I said to him, I said to him, your name's not Mike. And I said, you know you're lying to me. And you shouldn't be making a living by lying to people. And he said to me, yes, I know. He said, I'm finding it hard to find a job. I said, but if someone was ringing up your mum or your dad or your friends and they were lying to them, you think how you'd feel? So he said, yeah, and then he put the phone down on me. But it was obvious a scam. We know it's a scam, don't we? We get those sort of calls, oh, here we go again. But actually, not all scams are obvious. Sometimes the wrong way isn't always easy to see. As you go through Proverbs, you think, oof, that was a close-run thing. There are things which are not obvious. If you took them on face value, you could be spiritually scammed. So there are dangers. And there are things we meet, and it looks like the right way, it feels like the right way, it sounds like the right way, but actually it's the wrong way. And that's why we're protected from dangers by this book. If you look at verses 11 to 15, discretion will watch over you, understanding will guard you, delivering you from the way of evil, from men of perverted speech who forsake the paths of uprightness, to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perverseness of evil, men whose paths are crooked and whose ways and who are devious in their ways. So he uses words like perverse, crooked, devious. We think about a treasure map, weren't we? The wrong way isn't the kind of, there's a pirate standing there with an eye patch on and going, ha ha, and this is the wrong, pointing you in the wrong direction, because you'd spot that a mile off. Often the wrong way is devious. So it might look like a straight path, and you go down it, but then there's a slight turn, and you go down that, and then there's a slight turn, and you go down that. And as far as you can tell, you've almost been on a straight line all the way, but every time you, it's like a little turn and a little turn, and then before you know where you are, you're in the dark, and you don't know where you are, and you're lost. But you thought you were taking a straight path, and you thought that every decision you were taking was still on that straight path. Because he uses words like perverse, crooked, the devious, who are devious in their ways. They're not what they seem to be. You can't take them on their own estimation of themselves. And also is saying that often with wisdom, little decisions that we take lead to crowning decisions. Most big decisions people have made, which can be disastrous, are because they've taken, in the run-up to that, lots of little decisions that appear to be harmless, but were not wise. Because actually they were being deceived. They were being led the wrong way. They were going from the light into the darkness, but the darkness didn't come all together at once, so their eyes got used to the darkness, and they weren't aware that it was getting darker and darker, and so on. So little decisions lead to crowning decisions. And as you go through Proverbs, you'll meet lots of people. You'll meet people who appear to be generous, kind, fulsome, friendly. And actually, Proverbs will say, well, actually, they're not what they seem. Be careful. It's not what it looks like. And we can be taken in. But wisdom will deliver you. Because it keeps us living face to face with the Lord. And he gives us the wisdom so we see through things. And the little decisions mean, because I'm face to face with the Lord, I take the little decisions on the basis of seeking first the kingdom of God. And therefore, when the crowning decision comes, I'm on the right lines. Because I learn to trust him for the little decisions as well as the big decisions. It does mean, though, I've got to keep on being humble and teachable. Many years ago, a young believer stopped coming to Wednesday Bible studies because I was going through a book of the Bible, and this particular young believer had a very fixed view of what this book was saying. And when heard that I said something which this young believer disagreed with, instead of coming and talking to me about it, let's discuss this and let's find out, they decided unilaterally to stop coming on a Wednesday evening. And then they very, very nearly went off the cliff of false teaching. I know that because they came and talked to me about it. Because they wouldn't talk about it. And the path which was leading to false teaching was just straight lines. It looks like a straight line almost all the way, but it wasn't. It was taking them another direction. So we must be alert. We must be aware. But there are other dangers here. Because there are people who make sin look attractive. And we'll meet this woman. I won't say too much about this woman tonight. Because we're going to come back to her. A lot will be said about her in the next few chapters. But verse 16. So you'll be delivered from the forbidden woman. The strange woman. Literally. From the adulteress. With her smooth words. Who forsakes the companion of her youth. And forgets the covenant of her God. For her house sinks down to death, and her paths that are departed. None who go to her come back, nor do they regain the paths of life. So wisdom, this wisdom enables you to see through those who make sin look attractive. And here's the forbidden woman, is an adulteress. She makes promises. That's the language, isn't it? Smooth words. They're easily swallowed, if I can put it like that, because they're smooth. And there's a sense, you know, when you meet her, you might feel, I've never felt so alive. But actually, if you sleep with her, you end up sleeping with death. Her house sinks down to death, and her paths to the departed. You go to sleep with her, and you wake up in hell. It's very strong language. Anyone come across the bolus spider? There's lots of species of bolus spider, and they're all found all over the world. But there's one group that they feed at night, and they feed at night on moths. And what they do, seems the females do this, but anyway, they make a. If you think of a conker on the end of a string, okay. Okay, but the string is the thread of the web, and on the conker is like this big ball of sticky web at the bottom, right? And moths fly around at night, and what the bolus spider does, it swings it around, all right, and the sticky bit catches onto a moth, And then it gets pulled in and the poor old moth gets devoured. Okay, but this is the clever bit. This is the clever bit. What this boa spider does, it mimics the smell of a female moth that's ready to mate. All right? So here comes a poor male moth. He's following the scent. And he thinks he's going in for an amorous liaison with a female moth. As he gets closer, the spider swings this web round and catches hold of the moth. And he gets eaten. All right? I kind of think that kind of catches up what's going here, isn't it? Because there's the promise of pleasure. Sin looks attractive. There's the invitation. Go with it. But actually, if you do, it'll take your life. So have a thought for the moth. I think it's a terrible, terrible thing to happen to. Not that I'm a moth and all, but I just feel so sad about all the, and the boa spider can change the scent. She mimics the pheromones of different species of moths. So she doesn't just simply go for one species. She can release a different scent to attract another species. And these male moths fly in, think they're going to greet a female, and the spider's there to greet them, and they get eaten. It's a bit like that, isn't it? She makes sin look attractive. Her smooth words, the invitation, draw nearer, for her house sinks down to death, and her paths are departed. And none who go to her come back, nor do they regain the paths of life. Well, as I say, Proverbs will return to this particular setting and situation. So we followed the line, haven't we? We've gone from base camp, we've got our supplies, and we know how to get those supplies, and I don't just pick them up at the beginning, I renew them all the way through the journey. I'm on the journey, there are real dangers to face, but we now come to finally the destination. And we'll close with this very briefly. So, verse 20, you will walk in the way of the good and keep to the paths of the righteous, for the upright will inhabit the land, and those with integrity will remain in it, but the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the treacherous will be rooted out of it. So basically, those who embrace wisdom, who walk with the Lord, they will avoid the dangers. They'll arrive safely at the destination. Of course, the destination is the promised land. It's God's country. God's new world. And they'll arrive safely home. But those without wisdom, those who cannot see, don't discern, don't walk with the Lord, they're cut off from the land. And the treacherous will be rooted out of it. So remember, wisdom is God's. He's the all-wise God. There's no wisdom outside God. Wisdom is therefore revealed by God. You can only get wisdom from Him. And wisdom is found in cultivating my relationship with God. In knowing Christ. An ever-deepening relationship. And if I do that, then says Proverbs, you will arrive safely at your destination. You'll get safely home to glory. And we begin to see again why this book is actually very significant and very weighty and very important to enable us to negotiate all the challenges on our journey and get safely home to glory.